Thanks for pressing play. If you love the serendipitous magic that can only occur in a real conversation, you're in the right place. This is Christopher Lockhead, Follow Your Different, the number one real dialogue podcast for business leaders, entrepreneurs, and category designers with a different mind. We're joined by category designing entrepreneur Sean Riley. Sean Riley is the co-founder of Dude Wipes. Born from a simple yet revolutionary idea among friends in an apartment, the team sought to offer a superior alternative to traditional toilet paper. The genesis of Dude Wipes was inspired by everyday needs and the desire for a practical yet humorous approach to male hygiene. This led to the creation of a product that has not only achieved sales exceeding $150 million, but also set a new standard in the category. Sean discusses the strategic category design, grit, commitment, and fun that propelled Dude Wipes to legendary success, securing a deal with Mark Cuban on Shark Tank, and becoming one of the top five greatest Shark Tank entrepreneurs. This conversation also delves into the importance of persistence and innovation in entrepreneurship. Moving beyond just products, they discuss creating a brand that resonates with consumers on multiple levels. Chris and Sean have known and worked together, so this makes this a multifaceted dialogue that you do not want to miss. Ahoy, my fellow innovators! Are you tired of just competing in crowded markets? Then it's time to raise the flag of the Category Pirates and chart your own course. The Category Pirates newsletter is your guide through the uncharted waters of category design. Learn from the legends themselves, the captains of category creation, how to frame, name, and claim your very own market niche. Hoist the sails and set a course for untapped riches. Subscribe to the Category Pirates newsletter at categorypirates.com and join the crew dominating brand new categories. Don't settle for being a better version of the competition. Become a true category designer and uncover the hidden treasures that await. Set sail with the Category Pirates today at categorypirates.com. Now, as Joey Ramone said, hey ho, let's go.
So, Sean, it sure is great to see you. I very much am looking forward to this conversation with the chief dude himself.
Yeah, Chris, happy to be here, dude. Pumped to chat with you, man.
I love you got the whole dude outfit on, too. You got the dude sweatshirt. You got the dude hairdo.
Got to live the dude life, man. Got to live the dude life.
And tell me about the dude mustache that you got going on here.
The dude mustache came in November. And I had my second kid. I was doing Movember, and I'm kind of like, this feels like a dad vibe, you know? So I decided to keep it. But then from a branding perspective, I started to like it as a distinctive asset. Cause I find mustaches, interestingly enough, are polarizing. So people either love or they hate mustaches, but they always kind of talk about them and bring them up, and a beard, not much chatter. You know, a guy could have a beard. No one's really going to say anything, but a mustache, you know, it felt like a distinctive asset to me. So I was like, maybe I'll just try and add it to the repertoire. So I've had the stash now for 3 months, dad of two, stash life.
Hashtag stash life.
Yeah.
Now, is there you're making these people with another person, I'm guessing?
Yes, with my wife, Joy. So,
and what does Joy think about the dude stash?
The dude stash, it's grown on her a little bit. So she's okay with keeping it for now, but that could be sort of the beginning and the end of the dude stash if it falls out of favor with her.
That's generally what happens to most dudes.
With mustaches.
Well, whether the life likes it or not, I have a dear friend. His name is Matt. He's an adopted brother, as is his wife, Stephanie. Absolutely love these people, have been in my life for decades. And Matt has essentially the exact same stash you have, like a full-on stash, but it doesn't go, it's not handlebar. It sort of stops at the sort of in between the top lip and the bottom lip on the side, right? But it's the full stash like you do. And I've never seen him without it. And one time he was trimming it and he sort of sliced part of it out and it sort of looked stupid and he trimmed it off. And Stephanie said it was like having sex with a different person. She didn't like it at all. So he has kept the and classically, of course, we call what you have and what Matt has the porn stash.
The porn stash. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that a lot. It's kind of I'm in Chicago too, so it's kind of like your Ditka, Phil Jackson,
yeah,
Turnbull, you know, it's like a Chicago coach stash too.
And it works with your hair too, the longer hair and shit that, and you know, the business. I think it's very iconic. I from purely a marketing, you know, I started to lose my hair very early in my early 20s, and I got some Rogaine. I started to do that shit, and I was like, this is bullshit. This is not me. I don't give a fuck. I'm not putting this dumb shit on my head. And I just said, fuck it. And I started shaving my head, you know, tighter and tighter and tighter until I just shaved the whole thing off. And so as a young man, I used a shaved head in a similar way. And I think this is a good calling card for you.
Right on.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. The shaved head's a look too, man. So you just gotta rock what feels good for you.
1 year for Movember, I grew a handlebar mustache. Like right now I've got a goatee and I often have a goatee on, but I grew out a handlebar mustache for Movember. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm 6'2", 210, bald, tattoos. And when you walk into a place the way I look with a handlebar mustache, it's amazing. I'm curious if this has happened to you. The entire world treats me very differently with that handlebar mustache. Did you find there was a difference in the way the world treated you with your porn stash?
Certain people, yeah. Like a bartender, when you got a mustache, you're like, oh, sweet stash, dude. You know, like conversation starter. It's not, the porn stash isn't quite as intimidating, I don't think, as the handlebar. So I haven't gotten those experiences yet. But yeah, certain people really, you know, give a nod to the stash. It'll be the first thing they say to you, you know?
Yeah. And at least for me, looking the way I do, the handlebar, it is very intimidating for people. They are not happy to see me coming. The server in the restaurant, the person checking you in at the airport, the person walking down the street. Yeah, it's a very, they assume I own a Harley and I'm part of a gang.
Right.
So, first of all, I love everything about Dude Wipes. The name, first of all, is legendary. Congratulations. Most brands are really bad. Dude Wipes. And the great thing about Dude Wipes is I cannot have heard of Dude Wipes ever. And then I hear Dude Wipes and I have a pretty good idea what the fucking stuff might be. So how did you come up with the name?
So we came up with the name, you know, really just because we were dudes wanting to make wipes. So it's as simple as it was. We were beginners and, you know, in anything entrepreneurial, product, any of this stuff. So being a bunch of guys sitting around in an apartment, you know, eating burritos, drinking beers, living our post-college lifestyle. I mean, we were just total dudes at that moment. Like when you talk about a dude, like that is sort of like a quintessential period in a dude's life where, you know, they're off on their own and they got a paycheck and you're living with your buddies and you're just having fun. So when the idea was like, hey, we're using these baby wipes, these things are called baby, you know, wipes for babies. Why don't we make something better? And, you know, these are better than toilet paper. So the whole like idea that these were cleaner and we needed to make something better was the like product idea. But Dude Wipes was just like the first name that we always had. Well, we should call them Dude Wipes. And it was more of that like name first, brand first sort of like mentality that we had. And then it became all about, well, like, what could Dude Wipes mean? Like, we could be so fun. We could say this about taking shits. We could say this about going to the bathroom. We could say this on social media. So, like, yeah, very quickly, you know, the name came. And then it was like, because a great name is like amazing, you know? And then it's like, well, then what does that name mean to us? And what do we want it to mean? And that's where, like, that humor and, like, real life, you know, authenticity, friendship, bluntness, boldness. Like we just started wrapping all this stuff around how we would have conversations on the couch. We were like, hey, maybe that's how a brand should act to people, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Now, the thing I really want, other than the products are great. I want to get into the products. But what I really need, just because I love the brand, of course, I love the category, is I need a Dude Wipes t-shirt. And I was looking on your website. I couldn't find like merch. Is there, can I buy a t-shirt on here that says Dude Wipes on it? Is it under the dude underwear?
We got some Dude Wipe stuff in the office, like swag that we give out. We have a lot of this sort of like dude stuff on the website. Like there's a couple dude polos, but we are going to be kind of revamping that to Dude Wipes here this year to make it even more clear. So,
well, I don't, you, yeah. Tell me where I go to get on the Dude Wipes t-shirt waiting list, because I have to have a t-shirt that says Dude Wipes on it.
I got you, man. I got you. Hit me with the address after this. Okay. We'll ship some out.
And I'm happy to be a paying customer.
No. So, I refuse.
Well, thank you. So let's go to, you know, if you think about entrepreneurship and category design first principles, we want to find a problem, a new problem or an existing problem reimagined in a different way. And so why do dudes need a different way to wipe their asses other than just good old fashioned TP?
Yeah. So the aha moment you have with that is when you use toilet paper and then you use a wipe. So at the time we were using these other wipes, we're using baby wipes, and you see that you still had shit in your ass, you know? So you use this product that's being used for hundreds of years, you know, as a main staple in society for cleanliness, and it just doesn't get you as clean. And you can clearly see that when you use something else afterwards. You're like, oh man, that was still in there? Gross. So like, that's your category aha moment. That was, you know, our guys in the apartment aha moment. So why do dudes need them more than other people? Well, you know, dudes are taking a lot of big, nasty shit. So we kind of felt like, especially at that time in your life, like this is like a quintessential person who needs a wipe. And like, you're on the go a lot. You're at the office. You're at the bar. You're at the beach. Like all of these things where you kind of need one at all places. And that's why our very first SKU was just an individually wrapped condom-sized dude wipe. So that was our first idea, was like, hey, we need these clean wipes when we're on the go, at our office, at the bar, in the gym bag, wherever. And no one was really putting that portability out into the market. And dudes on the go especially needed those. But kind of everybody does once you get into it. Like maybe we were kind of like a savage bunch at the time and thought we needed them more than others. But then, you know, you got parents and they need more wipes than they can even buy, you know? So then you have these other stages in life where you got old dudes who start having incontinence issues and they need way more dude wipes than the 25-year-old dudes. And so you start to kind of understand all these different life stages, and then like everybody could use a wipe. And we're just about sort of like educating you like about the benefits and that this is better, but how do we get you to like actually notice us, look into it, try it, you know, with the brand, try and get in front of you, have some fun, not take the whole conversation too seriously.
I love it. I don't know why this is in my head, but there's an old movie called, what's it called? It's with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. And there's a great line in the movie. It's like a movie about old guys getting old. I'm blanking on the name of the movie right now. And there's a line in the movie where Jack Nicholson, they're going through kind of changes. Yeah. And he says, never trust a fart. Right? You get past a certain age. It's like, yeah, well, it's so there are all these situations in life that nobody really talks about, that you could need these, right? So for one example, where you started, anybody who's ever wiped their butt and thought they got everything and didn't, knows the exact feeling you have 10, 15 minutes after you go when your butt is not actually clean. There's a very specific feeling of, oh, I still have shit in my butt feeling. Yes?
Right.
That's a universal feeling, right?
Totally, man.
And it's not the good feeling. It's a bad feeling. It's an itchy feeling. And what are you going to do about it? Because, hey, I just went to the bathroom. I wiped my butt like my mom taught me. I thought I got everything, but now I still have an itchy ass. How big is this problem?
I would say that's a pretty big problem. We've seen people online call that the maintenance wipe, where you've already done your business and then you feel like later you just need to go in there to kind of maintain the situation and go take a maintenance wipe. But no, I mean, it's a big problem. And especially if you're just using toilet paper, which, you know, 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10 people still are, you know, yeah, it's an issue. And like, you're not confident, you know, like it's just, nobody likes being dirty, and especially down there. And so that's something that really makes people sort of appreciate like having a wipe, even if they are used to using wipes and for some reason one's not around and then they have that feeling. It's just, there's stickiness to what we do once you understand the feeling, and the better feeling, you also understand what it's like not to have it. You know what I mean?
And so do you envision a day where dude wipes is in every major bathroom in the civilized world?
Yeah, for sure. Trying to just become as ubiquitous as toilet paper, and just find different innovative ways to keep serving people where it's easy for them to use our product and they have a better experience. And so that's why we think we're still super early in this whole thing. Because we're really just trying to continue to innovate on like the product side as well as the brand side. Just like, how can we make this easier for people, more accessible, all that stuff.
Now, as a category designer, I hear this idea and I'm immediately intrigued. And one of the reasons why is it hits a lot of the category design sort of markers that we look for. It's solving an existing problem that is well known and well understood, that has a well known and well understood solution. However, you're reframing the problem, which is, did you really get clean? And it turns out you didn't. And once people are willing to consider that, then they're open to a new and different solution. The other sort of parallel I see here, and I wonder if you guys have seen this or thought this in the past, Sean, which is, if I could own any sort of company in the world, I think there's maybe two that I'd really love to own. One is In-N-Out Burger, which has got not a lot to do with this conversation, although you could argue downstream it does. And then the second one is, I would love to own a company called Gojo Industries. And Gojo Industries is the category king of liquid soap. And about 30 or 40 years after liquid soap, because Gojo Industries continued to focus on the problem, which is, how do we get people's hands clean? They looked at it from a slightly different perspective one day. They said, huh, how do we, quote unquote, wash hands in the absence of water? Well, that question led to the product that I'd really love to own, which is Purell.
Right.
And when the hand sanitizer category came out, pioneered by Gojo with the Purell brand, a lot of people thought, well, this is stupid. We all know how to wash our hands. We get soap and water, and what do we need this for? And of course, Purell is everywhere, and in some ways is a precursor to the wipe category taking off, because I would call it an adjacent space. And so all that is to say, when you were first getting going, how many people sort of said, this could be a very interesting new category, versus, hey, Sean and you duty bro brothers drinking too much beer and eating too many burritos, this is fucking stupid.
You know, I would say most people said this is fucking stupid because we didn't have anything to make you believe personally. We were just guys with no experience saying we're no budget, no investors. We're literally buying this product and putting it in our spare bedroom, and we're going to go disrupt the toilet paper oligopoly. Like, you can see why that would be far-fetched to most people.
Well, it does. It does have a. There's a component of a bunch of dudes watching football drunk, and somebody goes, "Hey, you know what we should do, man? We should make Dude Wipes." Like, it does feel like that could be the origin story.
For sure, and it was, and I think that that's probably why there wasn't a ton of belief. The category was also very early. It was kind of just like a Cottonelle brand that literally had a puppy dog on it. You know what I mean? Like, it was, and so there was a lot of people who thought, well, you're never going to get dudes to use wipes, you know? And we just, that never even like crossed our mind, because we were dudes and we enjoyed using wipes that weren't even Dude Wipes, you know? So we're like, we were very confident that yes, dudes will use wipes if we make better ones for them. Like, that feedback I never really got. I think it was more like an old school mentality. And we were like in this, like, men's grooming was starting to kind of become a thing, but we were doing something like in toilet paper, you know? So it was like this weird conglomerate of ideas and categories and things that were coming together, but we were very confident we could get dudes to use wipes because we were dudes and we liked wipes and we were going to make one a little bit better. But you know, I think, yeah, those were the two things. Like, who are you guys? How could you guys ever pull this off? And then, oh, you really think you can get wipes to become a staple in a guy's routine? No, I don't buy it. And having that insight that we have about having a cleaner ass and knowing like who doesn't want that kind of thing never made sense to us. If anything, I could give you credit on like not wanting to bet on us because we didn't have the proof in the pudding to show you, but not wanting to bet on dudes using wipes, you know, that I feel like was going to happen, whether it was us or somebody else, you know what I mean?
Well, and you may not realize it, Sean, but what you said is more powerful and profound than maybe you know. There's a video out there of Don Valentine, the founder of Sequoia, who is considered to be, you know, one of the founders of Silicon Valley, one of the godfathers of Silicon Valley venture capital. Guy I respected very much. And the speech that he gives talks about exactly this issue, because Don was an intuitive category designer. And he says, at Sequoia, we don't invest in people. Investing in people is dumb. We don't invest in products. We invest in markets. Tell me about the market. I want to hear how you're going to get to the market. I want to hear how you're going to define the market. And he goes on and on and on about, tell me about the market. And knowing lots of folks at Sequoia for many years, there's sort of an aha, and I probably shouldn't say who said this, but a mediocre entrepreneur can be much more successful in a great new category than a legendary entrepreneur in a highly competitive category. And so what you're actually saying is, and this is really the truth, bet on the what we in category design call the category potential, or said more simply, bet on the idea more so than the people. Of course, you want to believe the people can go prosecute the idea.
Right.
But mediocre people who are slightly motivated in a very big idea that has massive category potential is a much better investment than a bunch of great people attacking an entrenched market with our product is better than their product.
No, 100%. And I couldn't agree more on that. Like, you can't fight your way out of like a shitty declining category. You know, it's just everything you do is more expensive and harder to execute, but you're getting into a category that's growing and you can start defining your segment of it and what you mean, like, that's just a great position to be in that you can build on, you know, for years and years. And that was like, we knew from some stuff we were able to get our hands on, like, oh, flushable wipes are selling $250 million a year. Like, that was our stat as a category when we started. And, you know, this year they'll do over $1 billion. So we were saying, like, hey, like, we think this category is going to keep growing. We think it's super early, hasn't had any cool brands in there that have tried to mean anything to anyone. So we felt good about that too. But yeah, all of the brand stuff and the people stuff, unless you're getting into a category with some tailwinds, it doesn't mean that much.
Awesome. So the degree to which you're comfortable, I know you guys are private, and so there may not be some things you want to share, but can you give me some context for Dude Wipes today? How many wipes you sell, revenue, if you're comfortable, distribution, people? Kind of give me a sense of what the business looks like now.
Yeah. Yeah. So the business today is, we're wiping billions of butts per year. So that's my Ray Kroc line. So last year we wiped, I think it was about like 2.4 billion butts. So that's how many wipes we produced and circulated into the market here in the US. And that resulted in over $150 million of sales out in retail. And that's between your major players, Walmart, Target, Amazon, Kroger's, stuff like that, Sam's Club. So, you know, where toilet paper is sold, that's where Dude Wipes are and are continuing to try and be and close those distribution gaps. And we did all of that with about 20 people. So because we grew up lean and mean, and we look at this as a world where you have to be resourceful, not resources, that's how we continue to run the company, is be super resourceful, not throw people at problems, like grow patiently and intelligently and organically. And then when you have a brand that kicks ass and a brand that does fun things and a brand that means something, you can also grow your brand in unique ways that don't require, you know, rounds of venture capital and stuff like that. So the whole Dude Wipe story, where we are today, has been built, you know, organically and bootstrapped, which is, yeah, I like to say the two things I'm proud of is that we have fun here and that we're profitable. And the top line stuff will keep coming, but as long as we keep doing those two things, we're going to have a good future ahead of us.
So thank you for that. Let me just make sure I get it. So 20 people, 2.4 billion butts, $150 million revenue business.
Yes, sir.
That's fucking legendary. That's even more legendary than I thought it was. I knew the numbers were good. I didn't know they were that fucking good. Sean, and how old's the company?
10 years, 11 years.
Yeah. Since we started fucking A. You're like, yep, a SaaS software company, but you're selling an analog product for dudes' asses. It's unbelievable. $150 million. Okay, so I fucking love it. I want a lifetime. Is there a lifetime subscription offer on your website? Can I?
There isn't, but that's a good idea.
Well, you know, because interestingly enough, right, like years ago, I don't know if they still do it. The airlines, I think they stopped, but years ago, you could buy like a super ding dong pass on American Airlines and a few of the others where you gave them, like, I forget what the number was, like $500,000 or $750,000, whatever it was. And you bought like your status forever and all this good stuff. So it'd be interesting to say, like, if I, almost like a golf membership, dudes understand golf, you know, if I pony up this amount, I get a subscription for life at this, you know, whatever discount. I want to be a Dude Wipes dude forever. And to your point, yeah, I want to lock in my dude pricing now. I'm 56. So the next 20 years, I'm going to get worse and worse. I'll be shitting all over myself soon. I like to drink beer. So if I can lock in my Dude Wipe supply cost now.
The Dude for Life campaign.
The Dude for Life. Now, so where were you guys? How old were you guys? Kind of where were you stage and growth-wise when Well, I mean, let me step back. How'd you get on Shark Tank?
We kept applying. So the first year we applied to Shark Tank, I showed up to one of the in-person pitches in Chicago, and we didn't have any sales yet, but we had our first prototype and we were so excited. And, you know, I was pitching the producers and they were like, oh yeah, it's pretty funny. You know, like we like it, but you know, no thanks. So then the second year we had a little bit more sales, a little bit more traction, and we reapplied and we got a little farther. And then the third year, which is essentially now our third year in business, we, you know, business was still growing, still very small, but growing. We were kind of like that perfect size for Shark Tank. We had just gotten a deal with Kroger to have Dude Wipes in the toilet paper aisle. So sort of like 3 years into the business, you know, the main idea of trying to get Dude Wipes in a toilet paper aisle, like someone takes a flyer on it. And so we kind of have that as fodder to like get into Shark Tank. So yeah, it was 3 years into the business and we went out to film in June of 2015. And we were standing in front of the sharks with about $300,000 in sales year to date. But we were saying we were going to make $1.5 million that year because like we had some retail rollouts coming up and stuff like that. So, you know, sub $1 million business when we get into Shark Tank.
Now, of course, I've seen the episode. I think it's fucking great. I had never watched the show until fairly recently. My wife is a big fan of the show and I didn't ever watch it because I was like, it's sort of like a cop going home and watching a cop show. You know, I spend my entire life in the tech ecosystem. Like the last thing I want to do is watch a bunch of fucking entrepreneurs pitch and VCs talk to them. I'm like, this sounds like a day at the office and that's not what I want. But
right. You know, the average American loves it though.
Well, see, now this is the thing. It goes back to the mustache discussion, right? Which is the person in the marriage who decides what's going on in the marriage is the person who's in control, and that person's the woman generally.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I have actually become a fan of the show, and I think it's great, and I've seen your episode. But now imagine if I wasn't somebody who'd seen it. Maybe I've heard of Shark Tank. But I wasn't, I had not seen your episode, Sean. I said, tell me what happened when you went on Shark Tank. How do you tell the story of walking through those doors and standing in front of those VCs and entrepreneurs?
Yeah. I mean, walking through those doors and getting out there is definitely like when you have like the nerves, right? You know, you all of a sudden you walk out there, you stand on your mark on the carpet and they're adjusting the cameras and all these people are in front of you who you've only seen on TV before, you know? So there's like this shell shock moment where you're just kind of centering in before they're like, you know, action. Then I always say it's the first like 90 seconds is, hey, you know, we're Dude Wipe from Chicago, Illinois. You know, we're here because we're solving X problem and we're raising this money and you give your pitch, right? And that pitch is kind of completely unedited, you know, whether you screw that up or you nail it, like that's what they show. So
you don't really get a second chance. If you go out there and drool on yourself, they don't say, oh, let's go back behind those doors and start all over, Sean. No, you're going to be drooling on yourself on TV.
Yep. They're just going to keep the camera running and watch you wipe your drool up and recenter yourself and stuff like that. So that is the part we were like prepared for and just like, okay, like let's just go nail the pitch, you know, get them intrigued, pass out the Dude Wipes from there. And we did do that. It's kind of shit show from there in terms of,
you know, pun intended.
Pun intended, a real shit show for our episode. And they're shouting questions at you and talking over each other. And you're just, you know, then you're in like a full blown negotiation, business convo. And that's actually for me when you kind of forget the cameras are on and it gets a little bit more natural and easy because we had, you know, pitched to investors before, never successfully, but we had pitched to investors before. We had handled these questions. We were
so prepared. No VC at the time of Shark Tank.
Nope.
Friends and family or outside investment of any kind?
No.
Nothing.
Just dude seed money.
Just the dudes. Okay.
Yeah.
So walk me through what the various sharks say, and in particular, if there's one or two sharks who turned you down that you remember as being sort of an interesting turn down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they all have to give you a reason that they're out. It's just part of the show, right? Like, I'm out and this is why. And so I had always envisioned, literally, you know, visualized, we're going to get a deal with Cuban. Like, Cuban's the guy. He gets the brand. Like, that's our shark, you know? And so we're out there. They're bantering. They're interested. You know, they're not like, this is a stupid idea. You know, like, it's interesting to them. Cuban's the first guy to go out. Hey guys, I think what you're doing is interesting. I'm not a wipes guy. And so for that reason, I'm out. So basically he says he doesn't use wipes, which again, it shows kind of how early we were in the market, the category or whatever. Like, you got people just being like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. Like, you know, so it clearly is a better way, but here you have someone who's just like, no, wipes, not for me. So that was like a blow in real time, right? Like, oh, crap, the guy you thought was so on brand is out. But obviously you just quickly recenter. You're on camera and, you know, moving on to the next guy. So thank you, Mark. Barbara goes out because she pokes her hole through a wipe and, you know, says, these don't seem sturdy enough for my husband, you know, back to the tastemaker at the house, kind of saying like, I wouldn't get these for my big husband because they don't seem sturdy enough. And we counter and, you know, well, Barbara, they're flushable. They're supposed to kind of break up. Like, that's part of the whole thing. But they didn't show our counter on TV. They just kind of show our shocked faces like, Barbara just poked her hole through our wipe. You know, we're screwed. So then Lori is out basically. Hey, you guys are from Chicago. You guys are cool. I'm from Chicago. But I think you got two dudes who are interested. So I'm going to let the dudes, you know, do the bidding. And then we got Robert Herjavec and Mr. Wonderful, like genuinely interested in the business and sort of bidding against each other. So we do the classic Shark Tank move and say, you know, well, what about for both sharks? You know, we'll do a deal for that if both sharks come in. I think it was, you know, we had went out there with a $3 million valuation. And now it was down to 1.5, which is pretty classic Shark Tank VC. Like, what we're going to give you credit for what you've done or what you say you're going to do, not like a multiple, you know? So we started with this multiple of revenue thing that didn't fly. But we were like, okay, you know, that valuation. So that was like 25% for 300 grand or something like that. You know, Herjavec and Mr. Wonderful, would you guys both come in for that? So then they do the classic shark thing and they say, well, for two sharks, we're going to have to up the ante, you know, and what about 30%? And we're like, ah, no, guys, like this is our bottom on valuation.
And remind me, Sean, was Mr. Wonderful trying to get a royalty on each wipe?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
Wasn't trying to get a royalty. He got it, but he started getting greedy. So he, you know, wouldn't from 30, he said, okay, well, what about 27.5? And so these guys are nickel and dime over 2.5% on valuation. We've already kind of moved far on and we're just kind of standing our grounds. Like, guys, no, like, you know, 25%, like that's our ceiling. We're not going to go any higher than that. And we're all just kind of sitting there. We're about to walk out sort of deal. These guys won't move. We're going
back and
forth.
So you think we're not getting a deal at this point? We're getting close to the end. You don't like the deal that's on the table. And you're, even though you've never got an EVC, you feel confident enough in your position that, and we tried to get on this fucking show three times and here we are, but we might walk back out of those doors with no deal. That's in your mind.
Yeah, that's where we're at, which kind of sounds crazy too when you frame it up that, like, they're getting greedy, we're getting greedy, you know, it's all over 2.5%, but we're just like, you know, we had a much higher ask and we just felt like, hey, like we had to stand our ground somewhere and this is where we picked to stand our ground. And then Mark Cuban stands up out of nowhere and says, I'll give you the deal at 25%, exactly what you're asking for, puts his hands out. And we just look over at Cuban and go, you got a deal. And so he just swoops the deal right out from underneath them. They don't see it coming. They're pissed off, you know, that he just came in and took the deal from him. And yeah, did the deal with Mark. And he's
and how does that feel the minute he says, I'm going to give you the deal you want, and here it is, and you guys are looking at each other and saying, getting ready to say that yes, and he jumps up and you jump up, and what's that moment like?
Definitely like a surreal adrenaline rush, you know? You're like, Mark Cuban's walking up to you, you're about to do the bro hug and, you know, do a deal with the guy that you came there to do the deal with. So yeah, it was like a shocking, like it plays out on TV as this like dramatic surprise. And that's exactly how it like played out with us, was just like a dramatic surprise that we were all jacked up about. Cause yeah, Mark was the dude we wanted to get.
And so if I was an entrepreneur and I look at you guys, cause to the best of my knowledge, Dude Wipes is one of the biggest, greatest success stories to come off that show. I know there's been many others that are awesome. But your business is right up there with any of the big successes, yes?
Yep. Yeah, we're like a top five Shark Tank company.
Oh, wow. I knew it was way top, but that top five. Okay, so I'm an entrepreneur. I got my idea. I got my Dude Wipes idea. I see a problem. I see it, and I'm as passionate as you guys. And I'm all the things that you guys were back then. And I want to get on Shark Tank. Sean, tell me how to get on Shark Tank. Tell me how to get Cuban or whoever the shark I want. What's the magic dude ass secrets?
The magic dude ass secrets. I mean, you know, I think it's things like you mentioned, like make sure the business, you know, isn't a good market and has some good opportunity. Like, and if that's not quite your idea right now, like make sure you're thinking about that and making the appropriate pivots, have some execution and growth done. So you don't want to walk into Shark Tank like I was trying to do with no sales. Like we would have gotten roasted had we gone in there earlier. So like get some product market fit, some proof of concept, just generate a couple hundred grand in sales online, which, you know, you should be able to do these days. And if you're not able to do that, you might have a problem with the product, you know? So just like get that product market fit, get some traction, and then start applying to the show. And then have a cool story to tell too, right? Like, you know, we had the story of the buddies from the apartment doing this thing with toilet paper that was new and different with the fun brand. Like it was a fun story, you know, bring in personality, and it was a real business that had potential and had gotten over a couple of those, like, will people buy Dude Wipes or not? You know, we had proof that people would. Now it was like, how big can these things be? So like, yeah, figure out that early product market fit stuff, that your business is the business you want to take on Shark Tank, and then be relentless with trying to get on there. You know, don't worry if they say no at first. Follow back up and all of that. You know, I'm one of many entrepreneurs who did not get on Shark Tank the first time they tried, you know.
And what was the value impact of A, getting on the show, and then B, bringing on Mark Cuban as your first investor?
Yeah. So A, getting on the show is like a Super Bowl commercial for your brand that's free and runs in perpetuity. And so, you know, for
they
10
play
minutes,
that shit on rewind, on replay, on CSN, CNBC like crazy. It's always on, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, the syndication.
So your episode shows up every once in a while in the rotation, right?
Yeah, probably like once a month.
That long, that much, given the show was that long ago. Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
So that free ad keeps running once a month.
Popular episode, you know what I mean? So.
And every time it runs, everybody sees it and they all do the same thing, which is they go, I wonder what happened to these guys. And they Google Dude Wipes, right?
For sure. And I mean, that first episode you're on, and especially when we were on, like the show was really hot, you know, is like an explosive awareness moment, you know, like 15 million people. It's not like there's a quantity of impressions, and then there's a quality of impression. And this is the most quality impression you can get. To have somebody bought into your story for 10 minutes watching you wheel and deal on TV and seeing you get a deal and rooting for you in the American dream. Like, that doesn't even compare to a commercial. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is so powerful. There's just something to that I'll never be able to quantify. You know what I mean? Right. But I do know people will, they still know us from Shark Tank, you know, and it's been 8 years now.
Do you get recognized as you're walking on State Street?
You know, I didn't have the mustache or the long hair. So sometimes, though, if I'm wearing dude wipe stuff, hat or whatever, definitely. But yeah, like the brand a lot, you know. Oh, yeah, I remember this from Shark Tank. So, and we've done some updates since then. So the whole Shark Tank effect thing has been great for our brand and you know, definitely glad that we did it. And then the Mark Cuban investment, you know, Mark is the only investor to date in our brand. So, you know, Mark's our seed investor. But we
so there's no other investor?
Nope. So it's just Cuban, and you know there's also something which took me a while to realize, like you get a lot of like self-belief and confidence being that early in a business and having someone like Mark be like, I believe in you, I'm going to bet on you, you know, and then you start getting advice and mentorship from this person and like that just for early first time entrepreneurs like us, like that means something. Right. And so there's just kind of that weird, like belief thing that helped us out. And like, and it even created when we would be in a retail pitch, all of a sudden they believed us because they saw us on Shark Tank and they knew Cuban bet on us. Like, so there's this credibility factor that like you almost internally have, even though we had good self-belief and confidence, it just helps that, right? And then there's the consumer and the retailer credibility. So all that's super powerful. And then Mark's had, you know, good investor level, like mentor advice for us, you know, all along the way too, because he's seen companies go from 500,000 to 5 million to 50 million to 500 million. And he kind of knows like what you should be watching out for, what you should be concentrating on. And Mark's a big like focus on opportunity guy. Don't drown in opportunity, double down on what's working, you know, a lot of things that early entrepreneurs are sometimes not great at and have shiny object syndrome and stuff. Like he's from an outside perspective able to kind of look and poke holes, and it's not like Mark or anybody in that perspective is going to be right 100% of the time either, because they are your outside investor, but having someone like that to give you big perspective advice has been great as well along the way.
And you haven't wanted to bring anybody else onto the cap table?
No, I mean, I would say there was certain inflection points where like we thought about it, like, hey, do we need, it was always more for capital, for people, because also Mark's one of Mark's really good pieces of advice along the way was, and we were always like growing profitably, right? Was like, okay, you guys are thinking about raising money. Do you need the money? And the answer would kind of be like, you know, I don't know. We think we could figure it out without the money. Like we think we can keep growing. Okay, so you're doing it for the access to the people? I guess maybe that's what the investors are telling us. Like they got good resources and stuff. Okay, can you find a consultant to hire who knows that exact same thing? Oh yeah, I guess we could, you know? So then we started attacking problems that we didn't have answers to by just hiring people off of LinkedIn. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're a CPG accounting expert and we're of accounting problems. Let's pay you 50 grand to tell us a bunch of stuff we don't know. So he kind of encouraged us to be more protective with equity, and use that cash to hire consultants for problems we were trying to solve and just make sure that we needed the money.
Yeah.
So that's what I always tell entrepreneurs, like raising money is about raising money. And sometimes you need that money and it's absolutely the right call for you. If you don't need that money, and you can get by without it, you probably don't need to be raising money. You know what I mean?
Now, how do you think about category design and building your category in the context of your product and your brand?
Focus. So like innovation in a vacuum is like the way that I refer to it on the product side. Like, let's just be super focused on finding the best way to clean your ass, and let's be creative and innovative, but like with those blinders.
It makes me
on.
Laugh every time. Am I a child? It's just funny every time.
No, you're not. And that's another thing we've learned along the way. People love poop humor. People love fart jokes from your kid in preschool to your grandpa. Like, everybody gets a kick out of this kind of stuff. And so that's why.
Have you ever sponsored a comedian?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have. Sure. That, I thought I had seen that somewhere. Comedy.
Bert Kreischer. We just did some
perfect.
Stuff on.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I saw. Yeah, he's Bert's perfect. He's horrible. Yeah. You can imagine how terrible his ass must be.
For sure. No, yeah. A guy like that is just, when we say like sponsor brand fit or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, that's it.
Okay. So. I thought I had seen this somewhere. The other thing about category design, I want to sort of get your insight on. One of the things that we share with people is whether they're a B2C brand or not. We use the idea of a grocery store to help people understand category design. So you and I walk into a grocery store. It is organized by category. There's a produce section. There's a cereal section. There's a dairy section. There's a meat section. And then each of those sections has subsections. Well, all of those things, of course, are categories. And so what category design is about is carving out a new section in the store that you can own. That's an analogy we use, even if it's a B2B company. You guys fucking did that. You convinced major retailers, I think if I heard you right, starting with Kroger's and now most of the big ones, you'll tell me, that there's an adjacent category to toilet paper called wipes, and we need to sit right there because you don't want to be sitting next to the Coke because no one's thinking about wiping their ass when they're buying soft drinks. Sure. They're thinking about wiping their ass when they buy toilet paper.
We learned some of those lessons early on because early on, you just, anybody who says yes to dude wipes, sure, you know, take them. And we would have like a deodorant buyer be like, yeah, like, let me try this pack of dude wipes in my like men's grooming aisle. And the velocity would stink compared to when we got it in toilet paper. So we had a couple of those early failures that, as simple as it sounds, that dude wipes belong in the toilet paper and that's our beachhead and that's where we need to build the big black wall, you know?
And isn't it interesting? And this is where this is something product bigots don't understand. I love what you're saying, Sean, because you can have the same product with the exact same super consumer in the wrong category. That is to say men's grooming products. But when you move it to the toilet paper category, same product, same target super consumer, revenue changes.
And you know who's the super consumer in the toilet paper aisle?
Women.
Mom.
Yeah.
Women, mom, like, and they like buying dude wipes, you know, and like buying them for the household. And
because they don't want their stinky ass sons. And for that matter, stinky ass husband to have a stinky ass anymore.
Right. And whether he knows he has a stinky ass or not, she's going to show up with dude wipes and say, start using these things. So, and then there's just a little, like when you're doing something different, you don't want to give anybody any reason to get confused. And when a dude wipe is by deodorant, it's like, oh, do I put this in my armpits or, you know, like, but when dude wipes are by toilet paper, oh yeah, this is for my ass. So like, even just the first couple years, us figuring that out and then just setting it as like disrupt toilet paper, you know, we want as much real estate over there as possible. Just was a powerful realization to just double down on that.
Well, and one of the things we teach in category design is don't attack a competitor, attack the status quo, attack the way it is. And you guys intuitively somehow, Sean, understood that you wanted to make toilet paper the villain. But how did you figure that out?
I mean, just sort of having, you know, a villain is great for marketing. So I think it was from like a brand perspective, we kind of liked it. Like it gave us something to talk about. I would say at first, that's where we liked talking about it. But then as we learned more sort of about the category side of it and the, you know, consumer psychology side, you know, we loved that, like moving, you know, the fro to stuff that you guys say, you know, became popular. So, you know, reading books by you guys and other people has helped us along the way understand, you know, how to best tweak and frame strategy for sure.
Awesome. You guys continue to do great marketing. I see the brand in all sorts of places. You show up in random places, and it appears as a casual observer, Sean, that you seem to have a magical mix of earned media, owned media, and paid media kind of working in a flywheel, because I see it in different ways. I see it around sports teams and sporting activities. I see it around gyms. I see you guys, and some of it feels like earned media. Some of it feels like your own produced own media. Some of it feels like maybe things you're buying. So tell me about how you think about marketing today, the kinds of marketing you do, and why it is clearly incredibly working incredibly well.
Yeah, I think it's that mix, you know, that flywheel, like you said, like because early on we always had to make the brand like work for itself to just get more exposure. We've always been like viral hackers on the earned media side. So that was just like in our DNA to grow up and literally to survive. We had to be earned media viral hackers. So, you know, that's how we would get in a news story, a girl in an MMA fight shit her pants. And, you know, that's national news. And all of a sudden we're on social media sending her dude wipes and she's posting that she got the dude wipes. And now we're in the national media story because it's so funny that we sent her wipes and $0, right? You know, like, so we would do that stuff again and again. And then we were growing and we had a real marketing budget. So now it's like, hey, let's invest in this, you know, sports team where we think we can, you know, educate a lot of guys about using dude wipes and be a fun part of the conversation, or, you know, the boring stuff, the performance media, the retail media, like that stuff does work. And when you're talking about like an Amazon paid ad, like that's shelf space, right? That's not necessarily marketing advertising, but we need to be spending money there because like we need to force our way onto this shelf, get sales, and then organically grow our presence. So then we started understanding that. And then, you know, we continue to reinvest dollars while being profitable into sort of the paid side and growing up, you know, growing the company up with more paid media to get the word out there. So like this year we'll have fun national TV commercial spots that are letting you know, that dude wipes beats toilet paper, wet beats dry, pants down, and like funny messaging and just a way for us wet to be out there.
Wet beats dry, pants down. I love that one, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, so if you ever want to get together and knock over a couple of thousand beers and brainstorm some of these things with a friendly, I'm your guy.
Yeah, man. What are you up in San Francisco?
No, I live in Santa Cruz.
Oh, Santa Cruz. Okay. Yeah.
Are you,
yeah.
You're still in Chicago?
Yeah, still in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, next time you're in the Bay Area, let me know. And first 47 beers on me.
There we go. I'm sure we'll come up with some shitty ideas.
Fucking love you. Now, listen, I would be.
Yeah, but, you know, in a nutshell, all those things got to work. I love how you guys have an emphasis on community and like kind of the new way to look at brands. And that's something that we need to make sure we maintain and grow. It's something that's always been in our DNA. So we didn't have to have like a culture shift to adopt that. And now it's about just having a healthy mix, understanding what's working. But, you know, I wish there was a magic bullet. But I think one thing I've learned is like you want to be successful, you probably should do everything well.
Now, I would be remiss if I let you go without asking you about the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And so Any connection? Any, tell me about the connection, if any, between Dude Wipes and the dude.
We have zero connection with the Big Lebowski. It's always been interesting, but now he's like done a couple commercials as the Lebowski. So I think a Dude Wipes one could be cool, but it's almost like now that he's done like a Stella one and another one. I wonder if like too many brands have gotten involved there, but
no, the answer would be no to that.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely something, that could be cool to happen at some time.
The other one, if I was your CMO for a day, I would probably reach out to the great people at, dudism.org. And dudism.org is, according to them, quote unquote, the slowest moving religion in the world. It is a religion founded on the teachings of the dude from the Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
And you can go there and become a dudist minister. I am one. I think you have to agree to abide. And then I think you press a button and you're, and if you pay $50 or whatever a number is, they send you a card and a plaque and a whole bunch of swag and silliness. Anyway, it's a fucking hysterical website. And I don't know who runs it. It has looked exactly the same for probably more than a decade, maybe 20 years. But if I were you, I would reach out to dudism.org and see if you can do a deal with them. If for no other reason, the writing the press release would be hysterical, because you could be the first ever consumer product to sponsor a new religion.
Right. No, that's hilarious, dude. I like that idea.
The other one I want to ask you about is, and we're going to start writing and talking a little bit more about this, is how to think about categories in the context of hierarchies and the landscape in which they operate. So hierarchy would be something simple, like if you think about transportation as a giant mega category, and then locomotive is a subcategory of that, and automobile is a subcategory of that, and SUV is a subcategory of automobile, et cetera, et cetera. And then there are similar adjacencies, like we talked about with Purell and soap. And so I have the other dude that I live with is a cat who identifies as a dog. His name is Bean. He's half Maine Coon. He's 21 fucking pounds. I'm surprised he actually hasn't come over to say hi. And he's a dude. And we have two other cats that are girls. The girl cats are clean and quiet and friendly and nice, and they don't bug you. And Bean is disgusting and smelly, and he's got food all over him, and he has shit on his ass, and he doesn't wipe himself. And so I've been trying to look for dude wipes for dude pets. Because if you were to make dude wipes for pets, and I looked around on the internet, there are pet wipes, but it sort of felt like the way you described the wipe category before you entered it. There's such a bunch of boring brands that don't look fun or anything like that. And so any thoughts of doing dude wipes for dudes with pets?
You know, I have heard that before, because the pet wipes thing is starting to become a thing. But
how funny would it be if you did dude pet wipes? So you have to be a dude and the pet has to be a dude. Otherwise, the wipes not for you. Or at least wipes for your pet that's a dude.
That's a campaign that would write itself.
Right? We don't have to get very drunk to come up with funny shit around that. Sean, I can't congratulate you and your partners enough. It is such a great story. You are the American dream. It is so fun. It is so creative. It is so silly. It is so legendary. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on?
Man, I think we covered a lot, but no, it's been great talking to you, Chris. We appreciate the content you guys are putting out there. It's getting people like us to either reaffirm things we believe in or think about things differently. It's helping me think about how can we design this category to be even bigger and not even play in the limitations of anything that's happening in the universe, create our own universe. And like, I think that's what we're really trying to do at Dude Wipes, and kind of appreciate people like you guys, you know, putting out really interesting opinions.
Well, thank you for that. If you had any idea what that meant to me and all of my collaborators, you know, when we wrote our first book, it's going to be almost 8 years since it came out soon. I really thought this is my last attempt to try to get category design to stick. And if this doesn't work, I'm just going to be the weird old dude in the corner drooling, talking to myself about all this shit. Because we really did want to open source category design to the world.
Right.
And our dream, writing that book, and frankly, doing everything that we continue to do to this day, is that a bunch of dudes like you are going to read some of that shit and have a couple of ahas that give you an advantage in building your business that you might not otherwise have. And so the fact that I stand or sit here now looking at your legendary dude mustache, understanding your incredible success, it just makes me very happy. And I hope the dudes at Dude Wipes abide for a very long time.
Hell yeah, dude. No, I think once you view the world from like a category designer's perspective, everything else looks kind of lame. You know, you just start understanding, well, there's a way to really do it and create net uniqueness in the world. And then there's everything else. So it's a challenge to do it for sure. But I wouldn't really want to be doing it any other way.
Awesome. And thank you so much for reaching out. I mean, one of the greatest things you can't comprehend when you start down this quote unquote writer creator path is you send signal out in the universe. You have no idea what's going to come back. And when you show up and, you know, say the kinds of things that you said and connect with us. And of course we knew who you were when you reached out to us and stuff. I'm like, oh, Eddie sent me a text.
And I thought that was cool. Eddie, I was like, oh, these guys know Dude Wipes.
No, Eddie sent me a text and he goes, the dude from Dude Wipes is hitting us up. I'm like, this is fucking great.
Dude from Dude Wipes is balls deep in our Substack.
I love it. That's exactly where we want you to be, because we want you to sell the next 2.5 billion Dude Wipes.
For sure.
All right, Sean, anything else, brother?
No, that's it, my man. It was great talking to you. And
Thank you.
We'll do another one sometime after a couple more billion butts.
I would love to do that. Absolutely. Let's keep in touch. Your story is completely legendary. We absolutely want to track you. And, you guys are everything that's legendary about category design and entrepreneurship rolled up into one big shitty idea.
Love it, brother.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
That was the legendary Sean Riley. Check out everything dude at dudewipes.com. Don't forget, podcasts make great gifts. Share two podcasts you love with two people you love. And make sure you follow us today on your podcast player of choice. We'd like to thank you. We appreciate you investing part of your life with us. Are you drowning in endless tasks? Well, hire a dedicated distant assistant from Bottleneck and reclaim your time. Their remote pros handle everything from admin to analysis with unparalleled efficiency. Wave goodbye to bottlenecks and hello to newfound freedom. Stop working harder, start working smarter. Affordable, reliable support awaits at bottleneck.online. Unlock your true potential. Hire your dedicated distant assistant today at bottleneck.online. Your website is the first thing people see about your business. Well, is it legendary? For over 20 years, the experts at AtreNet have been building preeminent B2B websites in Silicon Valley. They're the agency that helps tech companies conquer their categories with purpose-built, beautiful web experiences. If it's time for a rapid relaunch of your B2B website, visit Atre.net. Their proven methodology will take your site from ho-hum to epic in just a matter of weeks. Stop settling for average. Partner with the B2B website agency that delivers category-defining results. Head to Atre.net to get started. That's Atre.net. And are you ready to learn the greatest superpower in business category design? That's where the Category Pirates come in. Learn how to create different futures, design and dominate markets in the first business newsletter written for and by pirates. Go to CategoryPirates.com today and get your button gear. Today's information is provided to you solely for informational purposes. This oddcast is the sole property of the Lockhead Oddcast Network, and it contains content known to the state of California to cause radically non-obvious thinking, new categories, and exponential results. All oddcasts contain nuts, all rights disturbed. Please contact your doctor, lawyer, accountant, yoga instructor, shaman, and category designer before doing anything about anything you hear here today. Warning, in California, drivers blocking traffic in the left-hand lane by law can receive a $269 fine. So please, don't be lame. Get out of the passing lane. Everything is the way that it is because somebody changed the way that it was. Produced and edited by me, Jason DeFilippo. Sarah Knox and Jamie J handle the website and technical execution. Show notes by GM Simon. RJ and EX Bobus do our web development. Cedric Biros does our graphic and web design. Our law firm is Weed and Jack. Our accountants are Three Balance Sheets to the Wind. We record on squadcast.fm. Joan Jett was right. Listen to The Tragically Hip. Thanks, Candy Dandy. And hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together. Our deepest apologies go out to Sam Bankman-Fried. Even if you win your appeal, we'll still never have time for you. Till next time, stay safe, stay legendary, and follow your different.